story of Jesus. And here we go. Number three, lecture three. How Jesus' youth demonstrates his recognition of his calling as a spiritual sharer and master. How Jesus' youth demonstrates his recognition of his calling of as a spiritual master and sharer. That's a very interesting topic. Ladies and gentlemen, the year is 33, maybe 34, 33. And Jesus has been dashing around town playing games for 30 years. And then he had his ministry for 3 years. And nobody was the slightest bit interested in him or his life during the 30 years of his life. And Jesus lived in a time when the average lifespan was 30 years. So his mommy and his daddy, when he was 30 years, were old, very old. They were in their 30s, 40s, 50s, maybe 60s, and in that time, if that's what they were decrepit. They were old. They were ancient. They were long gray hair. They were not young kids, okay? And they didn't give a darn about Jesus' background, about Jesus' youth and Jesus' age. If Joseph was there, now we aren't even told Joseph was there. So let's just say Mary was there, because we are told that she is. And Mary was an old lady at the time, and John was taking care of her most of the time. John's just a nice guy. And so Jesus had his ministry for 3 years. And nobody particularly cared about his ministry. It was rather secret. Because the Pharisees and the chief scribes and so forth of the temple didn't even know what he looked like. Judas, our old buddy Judas, had to betray Jesus and take his 30 pieces of silver and show the guard which one was Jesus by kissing him, you know? Now that's not... not a very public person, not a person who is well known, would you say? Certainly someone who is not too well known. Okay, so this guy, who was a good guy, terrific, nobody knew anything about him. So along comes Judas and Pontius Pilate and the cross and kaput. Jesus is yesterday's discussion. However, he came back and registered his complaint, and he resurrected from the dead, as we have the story. Now, that's neat stuff. Who is interested in the background of Jesus? They didn't have newspapers, television, radio in those days. They had no way of telling the story, and nobody was caring about listening. Hey, this guy got on the cross. This guy was killed. This guy resurrected. Hey, this guy's cool, you know? Now, another 50, 60 years go by, and then people come out of the woodwork with names like Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John, writing about the life of Jesus, his time, and his teaching. Some similarities, because the stories were popularly known by them, as well as many other people called messiahs who lived in that time doing other wonderful works. Now, how do we know about the childhood of Jesus? We don't. How do we know about the early years of Jesus? We don't. Those people didn't know. And John is not the same John who wrote the book 50, 60 years later. Because how old would John be? He'd be 60, 70 years old. And when the average lifespan was 30, it's rather remarkable for someone to be that old. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not trying to knock the thing or anything. I'm just saying the common way of remembering details and having them put down and so forth is by scribes who write these things down in books. and they were not written down in books. There were Essene groups who wrote many things. But you see, what were they writing about? They were writing about the magic, the mystery, the wonder of a particular man. And the man was Jesus in many of their cases. And they were telling all about these neat things that he did. Can you conceive that any one of them would have had any interest in the early years of Jesus and what he did? You know, where he studied, where he went to school, where he was traveling around the world, if he traveled around the world. You see, nobody cared. Nobody cared. The article you have from Newsweek magazine will more or less go along with those ideas. The great theologians of the world are confused by those things because they don't have the information. Okay? Now, what's next? What's next? We're supposed to come up here with a statement that says to us how Jesus's youth demonstrated and demonstrates his recognition of his calling as a spiritual sharer and master. Well, we can only say we have one or two things about where it is. We can only say there were one or two incidents that might be referred to, like the 12-year-old thing. And why does the 12-year-old thing come up? Well, who knows why it came up. There's no reason for it. It just happened to be that apparently they went to pay their taxes, and on the way back, Jesus stopped and talked to somebody. Now, if you were going to write the story of Jesus, and you like Jesus, and you're going to write the story about this remarkable Messiah, what sort of things would you say about him? Now, just on the farthest reaches of our imagination, let's take this silly guy, Donald Simoda, in Illusions. Now, Donald Simoda was a keen guy. He was a reluctant Messiah, reluctant as you can find him, you know, and also silly. Now, number one, can any of you tell me where Donald Simoda was born? Can any of you tell me where he went to school? In the hills of Indiana, perhaps? Can you tell me what sort of teachers he had? Why he had to have teachers at all if he's a Messiah, you know? Can you tell me what he learned? Can you tell me whether he was a teacher? How did he become a Messiah? Did he become a Messiah just because he was so good that he was out there doing Messiah-type work? What's Messiah-type work? Not the type of thing that he did later on the radio station and the other thing like that. That was irritation work, wasn't it? Making everybody very irritated. Now, so here we have this wonderful book, The Reluctant Messiah, and we don't have any record of who the Messiah was, what he did. Now, we know about Emerson, Ralph Waldo Emerson. We know a little bit about his background because he lived in a contemporary type community and he was a public man from early on. And we know about Whitman. We know about Longfellow. We know about many other American people. We know about many Europeans. Goethe, you know about him? Did Goethe go to school? You bet. Who were his teachers? They were all listed who his teachers were. What did they teach? How were they doing things? You know, what sort of things were these people that's fine. What sort of things were these people that Goethe associated with? How do we know about him? You know, how do we know Goethe? How do we know any of these other famous people that came? How do you know Beethoven? Beethoven wasn't famous until he was a little later. And you don't pay attention to people's background until they're famous. And then you only remember what people tell you. Did you go to school with Beethoven? What sort of student was he? Oh, I went to school with Beethoven, and he was a good student. He did everything right. And you know, he taught me music too. He said I would have been good if I'd taken a few more lessons. You know, nonsense, you know. You're making up a story. You're making up a story because you want to sound good because you knew Beethoven, and perhaps you didn't even know him. Perhaps you didn't even go to school with him. Perhaps I said, did you go to school at Beethoven? Hey, sure, I did, you know. You know, kids, they love to tell these stories. It's kind of fun. So, then what? We have these stories. We have the story about Jesus. We have the story of his life told 60-some years after he had gone on. How many generations take place in 60 years? Yeah. How many generations take place in 30 years? Now you add 30 and 60, you have 90 years from the time Jesus was born until the time people started first writing down stories. 90 years! And what is going to happen during that time? Now, I'm not knocking it. That's the last thing I want to do because I think he's a great guy. And I think the story that I have about him is cool. And if he did what he did and if he said what he said, I concur. I believe in the guy. He's great. Okay, now, why am I making such a fuss over all this nonsense about him? Well, the reason is this. He probably was quite a normal young man. He didn't make a lot of static, and people didn't talk about him. People didn't say, oh, that Jesus, you know, son of Joseph and Mary, oh, that Jesus, you know, oh, that guy. They didn't talk about him because he was just an ordinary, wonderful guy doing his own thing. I do believe he spent a great deal more time alone, like an introspective and like an innovative youngster would do. Lots of youngsters do that. My son Mark, he spent a great deal of time alone. And his mother was in the hospital a great deal of the time, so he had to spend the time by himself. And so I taught him to enjoy his own company. I said, you don't need a house full of kids just because there's nobody else home. I said, do whatever your project is. And his project was airplanes. His project was drawings. He had my old real estate desk, and he was working on that as though he were king of the hill. And he was. He had everything going for him. And he did beautiful things. But who knows what he did? I wasn't there half the time. I was working. Nobody else was there. He was there. But what came out of his bedroom? What came out of his work studio? What came out of his photography studio where he flew airplanes around town and took pictures of people's houses and yards and then sold them the pictures? You know, very creative fellow. And what came out of that stuff? Magic. And all I have to do is talk to a person like Ellen or his other my friends who met him and say, Herb, you never said enough about him. He's a super guy. He's a wonderful guy. Well, I let himself talk for himself, and he's great. And Ellen says, man, I have never met a boy in my life that I was more delighted in and more, what did you say, felt good about, you know, just felt really good about him. He's just a pure type of a clean-cut type kid, you know what I mean? And he liked to sleep under the wing of the airplane. He liked to do all sorts of things, which are simple things. Now, how do you write about that? How do you say, well, now, Mark Byerly, Jesus, by another name, alias Jesus, he was raised with this here, and his mother was in the hospital a great deal, so he did this here, and his father was working, so he did this here, and he had 6 cars when he was 15, and when he was 16, he had 7, you know, and he had all, and they all worked, and a Lincoln, and a Cadillac, and a Volkswagen, and everything else in his son, you know, and so he did all these things. Why and how and who cares? But if you were to look at him and say, wow, and in his carport he had one airplane, and out at the airport he had another airplane, and he didn't even have a license yet because he wasn't old enough to have a license, but he could fly because he was soloed. And so he flew for years with just a solo permit, you know, and a fantastic kid. Now, I'm saying that, and I'm his dad. And I really don't know half the things about him. I don't know half the things that are going on in his mind. Half the imagination, the dreams, the magic, that he's coming up with new designs for engines and airplanes and other things. Just an amazing boy. And I mean, here I am as close to him as parents often are, which is not very close. And I don't even know half of the things that he's doing. I don't even know half the magic that he's doing. And then we're going to say a person from outside the family looks in at the family of Jesus and comes up with a valid format of what this boy did during his early years. We can only say Hebrew boys did this during their early years. Hebrew boys did that. But he was not a Hebrew boy. He was a Jew, it's true. He was a rabbi, it's true. He was many things, it's true. But he was no ordinary Hebrew boy. He was no ordinary human being, would you say? He was no ordinary individual that we could make any comparison to. We don't have the slightest idea of how many personal conferences he had with the divine within him. How many personal conferences do you think he had with God inside of him? Maybe every day, huh?
He lived inside.
Maybe he lived inside. Oh, now, isn't that an interesting observation? Where'd you get that fancy term, sweetheart, huh?
No.
How come you got so smart, huh? No, yeah. You try it yourself, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, you see, now, is she wrong?
Yeah.
Is she right? She could be more right than wrong, that's for sure. Now, did he do that? I believe he did. Did he have a oneness with the divine within him, which was unlimited, which was so fantastic that everything he did was a reflection of the magic that was his personal charisma, his personal soul, his personal beingness, his personal life? Wow. Now, you don't have to have the end of the story like Jesus had it, but he was doing it for a purpose. But wouldn't it be nice to have the beginnings of the story like he had it? A magic boy who went to America and discussed with the American Indians who were living there at that time, and with the Scandinavians who had come over there, Leif Erikson and so forth, discussed with them the philosophy, who went down to Mexico and South America and discussed with them the philosophy. Do you think that all of these great spiritual masters didn't spend a lot of time together enjoying each other's company? Thinking to themselves, you know, I got a bunch of dunderheads on my hand. I tell them the truth, and I tell it to them, and they say, yeah. And then I say, practice it, and they say, how? You know. And, you know, it's fun. But I believe that spiritual masters get together, I know they do, and have a lot of fun, and share ideas, not share the dunderheads, but share the geniuses. Oh, I've got another one coming up. Oh, he is great. Oh, she is great too, you know. The girls are there too. But he's got them. He's got them, and they share them. Now, Quetzalcoatl, you heard of Quetzalcoatl down in Mexico. And he came to be with his people, and he taught them and showed them the way, about the same time Jesus did. And then the people went off haywire, and he said, I've done what I can. So long, adios, amigos. And he walked out across the ocean and disappeared. Cool guy, you know? Real cool guy. And there were lots of others like that. Now, what were they doing? What were they doing? What do you know about the background of Quetzalcoatl? Where did he come from? Does he have a birth certificate? Does he have a mother and father that you know about? And just because somebody has a mother and father, does that mean they have a mother and father? Or does that mean that they merely merged with that family at that time for that convenience? How many of you merged with your family at the time of your birth? And you are living with your family, and you don't really belong there. You just are using that as a bus stop to come into this life experience. And that's kind of nice, isn't it? And you're not your family. You don't look like your family. You don't act like your family. You don't think like your family. You don't do anything like your family. Oh, people will say you have family resemblances, but that's a joke, because they'll say that about babies that come into the world with the ugliest face that you ever saw, and they say they look just like their fathers. Well, my goodness sakes, they don't have time to look like anything yet. You know, they just have that face that is not yet fully decided which direction it's going to go. Whether it wants to keep the family unity or whether it wants to be the divine being that it is. Wow, you know? Wow. What do I have here in front of me? What kind of people are you? Are you Jesus people? Are you people who are born with a destiny, not a destiny, but born with a princely background, you might say, or born as kings and queens, born as the ultimate? That's a good one. Are you born as the ultimate? I don't see many heads shaking. You're afraid
yes.
Yes, you're afraid to take the credit for that. But you know, once you say you're born as the ultimate, just like Edith here, she was born into her family. She didn't belong there. She came into that family as just a convenient slot to come into the world, you know. And so she popped in, and from the moment she was born, she didn't fit. From the moment she was born, she was in that family, but the family was a normal family, a good family, but she was a divine person. She was a spiritually illumined master. And she came in there, and she looked at them, and she said, "You guys are great, but man, you don't know how great you are. I see right through you to your divinity. And if you just let go a little bit instead of fighting it, you could enjoy it right now." And then the mother and father says, "Edith, why don't you cry? Edith, why aren't you an unhappy girl? Edith, why don't you complain? Edith, why do you eat everything that's on your plate? Edith, why do you not eat everything that's on your plate? Edith, why do you do whatever pleases you? Ha, ha, ha. Edith, why are you such a monkey shines?" You know? And Edith doesn't even answer those questions. Edith merely looks up and smiles and says, "Mommy, I love you. Daddy, I love you. The world, I love you." And what can they say? They can't say a thing. But this is what a master does. This is how a master comes into the world. And this is how each of you came into the world. "Well, I was a crybaby," you say. No, you weren't. You were told you were a crybaby, but you were not a crybaby. You were a self-content little angel. You were a gentle, lovely, self-content little angel. And, you know, I have two sisters who are twins, and they used to, I was younger than they, but they always said I was older. And so I was younger than they, and they would, when I'd break my leg, get run over by a car or some other silly things that were fun to do, they would take me in the baby buggy and push me around town. And they would say how they pushed me around town, how they did this with the, how they did that, how they always had to take care of me. And, you know, they did all these things, but I don't ever remember them being there. You know, they may have been supposed to be and taking care of me, but they were downstairs doing whatever they were doing. They weren't even upstairs in my bedroom, you know. They didn't even care, you know. And the only remembrance I have is that when I had a broken leg, I was in my sister's bedroom in a bed in their bedroom, you know, and my leg was up in a cast. Now, maybe it was they were supposed to watch out at me, but I never remember seeing them there. You know, they just had me in their bedroom because they were supposed to watch after me, but then they were out playing, having a ball. Did I mind?
No.
Not in the slightest. I had a great time in everything I did. I had a great time. Now, you did too. Now, just because you're a spiritual master, a spiritually illumined being, doesn't mean you don't have a broken leg, doesn't mean you don't have silly sisters who play their game. That doesn't mean that. It only means that you are content with who you are, and you are who you are, and you don't try to pretend that you're somebody else that you're not. Well, now, can you imagine Jesus telling his family, "Mom, pack me a lunch. I'm going off to the desert for a while." Oh, he could have just gone to the desert and not said a thing, but he said, "Mom, pack me a lunch," and so she knew he was going to be gone for a while. And then she didn't have to be concerned about him. So he went to the desert. And what did he do? He communed with himself. Now, he went to the desert. Where did he go in the desert? Nobody knows. He probably just went around the nearest rock. And then, poof, he's gone. Mm-hmm. He was gone. He went off to America. He went off to Africa. He went off to various places to just have himself a ball. Now, when he went off in his child body, did he live in his child body as he moved through these various dimensions? He lived in whatever body was comfortable for him. He lived in whatever body was fun and enjoyable. You say, well, Herb, you're just making up stories there. Oh? Can I say, been there, done that?
Yeah.
Can you say, been there, done that too? Are you comfortable with what I'm saying? Yes,
yeah.
Because you know you've done it too. You have done it too. And you have enjoyed it, thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. Okay. Now, where did he go? Where did you go? Did you go to the schools of the world to become educated? Why? You may have gone to the schools of the world to be an educator. Out of the mouths of children come these wise things. Now, Ellen, tell me, what's the Great Pyramid?
A learning center.
And what's the tip?
Well, tip is missing.
No, no, no.
Discipline.
Huh?
Discipline.
No, that's level. Right. The top.
The top level.
I don't mean the tippy tip is just missing. The top level is discipline. Now, what are the next levels? Each level has a name. Now, do you think that you, perhaps, are teaching in those various levels of the pyramid? And do you have to be physically present to teach there?
No.
Are you there as a consciousness?
Yes.
How do you get into that solid tip, that solid top there? Does it have rooms in it? It has rooms in it when you go there. When your consciousness is there, what kind of rooms does it have? Beautiful, large rooms. Does it have a fireplace? Does it have, in the middle of the Sahara, the desert, you know, the fireplace, you know. Does it have air conditioning? Yeah. Does it have radiant heating in the floor? Does it have windows? Does it have windows? Does it have desks and chairs? And
it has the light coming just...
It is there.
It's
light that is just there. Now, you're saying, wow, you are fanciful, you are fanciful. No, I am not. Tonight, when you go to bed, you take a trip to the Great Pyramid. And just stay in the upper portion, which is the top, which is the discipline center. And go in there with all of your creativity and imagination and look around. Don't look at the obvious. Look at the reality. And then let me know what you see. Because if you can see what I know you can see, and I know you do see, you will reveal to yourself that you're quite something special. Jesus spent a great deal of time there. He was a teacher there, a regular teacher, from the age of 2 and 3. If Mozart can play the guitar, violin, at the age of 3, you know, why can't Jesus do some interesting things at the age of 3 too, right? Huh?
What?
Why can't you do some interesting things at the age of 3? You know, you do, and you did, and you are, but you're not taking credit for it. Jesus didn't take credit for it either. But at least you should take credit for yourself of what you're doing. Because then, when people come up with some way out things, you can instantly say to them, yeah, I know what you're talking about. That is very conceivable. Not only conceivable, you've been there, but you don't want to let everybody know who you are and what you do and where you are, because then people become hanger-oners. Jesus had the greatest difficulty in his first 30 years of going out and having fun and being himself. And the next 3 years, he spent as a missionary, you might say, going out and sharing with the world the human aspects of the divine. He taught the Sermon on the Mount and other sermons and other attitudes, teaching people the human aspects of the divine. Living according to principle, living according to the rules, living according to what is right and beautiful and good. And the people began to live that way. The people began to surround. How do you think he could go up to these famous people who are educators and tax collectors and businessmen and jerks, you know, and fishermen and so forth, and say, come and be my disciple? And they say, well, what do you pay? What do you pay to be a disciple? Well, just lots of love, unconditional love. I'll take it. I'll take it. First time I had unconditional love that I can remember. Okay, I'll take it. And so some wanted to follow him, but were very rich. And what did he say to them? Take all you have and give it to the poor, because if you give it to the poor, then you will not have it to go back to if you don't like the program that you got yourself into. You got to give yourself in any program, you got to give yourself to it 100%, or else the program is no good. If you don't give yourself 100% to being a musician, you're not going to be a very good musician, are you? If you don't give yourself 100% to being a good person who's working on computers, who's working on writing, like Stefan, if he gave himself 100% to writing, he would be one of the notable writers of all time. But he's not doing it. Now, I'm not trying to tell you I hate Stefan and I'm mad at Stefan and I'm thinking, but you all know him. And you all know his genius, and you all know how he is just letting it slide by. And how many of you are just letting your genius slide by? And why not? Hey, cool, cool, cool. What did Jesus do the first 30 years? Cool, cool, cool. He let it all slide by, and he was out being himself and having fun. You see? And then his last 3 years, he thought, well, hey, let's see, do a little homework here and shake up a few boats here. Did the thorns hurt Jesus on his head? Nope. Did the spear in his side hurt him? No. What is he? Was Jesus his body? No. Is anyone their body? No. Unless you want to play that game. And if you want to play that game, then you have hurts, you have pains, you have growth. You have misery, but when you realize you are not your body, your body is a reflection of what you believe about yourself. Now, what did Jesus believe about himself? He believed he is perfect. Now, Jesus was no dum-dum. Take that for a given truth. What was the best things that anybody could have in those days? And we're talking about the Hebrews. What's the best thing that a Hebrew could have in those days? And what did a Hebrew do with what he had? The best things that a Hebrew could have were his clothing. His clothing. And a Hebrew went around with his clothing on his back. He didn't have any closets. He wouldn't leave his clothing at home. Somebody rip him off, you know. But a Hebrew always wore his clothing. That's why Jesus said, if someone takes your cloak, give them your coat too. And your shirt and your undershirt and your pants and whatever, you know. Give them the whole shooting match because you got it all on. Because you got 12 pair of pants on maybe, you know. You got everything you own on your back. When they go traveling, they don't need a suitcase. They're wearing it, you know. And maybe that's why I didn't notice they look fat, but they probably aren't. The rich ones maybe look fat. But you know what the rich ones do? The rich ones have their servants wear the clothing so that they don't have to carry all that weight. That's pretty cool, you know? We live in a pretty marvelous world, in a pretty creative world. We live in a world filled with lots of beautiful things going on. And Jesus did the same thing. And Jesus, as a young man, he was just enjoying himself totally. Do you know, there's a man who calls himself the Traveler. And he was very active years ago. He may still be active. And my secretary, Cecilia, she was 77 when she came to me as secretary. And She was a little old lady that lost all meaning and purpose in life. But she took our courses and she was doing great. And she was a concert pianist in Vienna, and she had been many places. And of course, you know, you can be a concert pianist in Vienna and play when the theater is closed. You know that, don't you? I was in what theater was that?
Verona.
I was in Verona, and I performed in Verona. And it was wonderful, I tell you. I was at my very best. There's not another soul there except Silva Buckman. And I sang, and I danced, and I spoke to the whole theater, gave the whole theater my whole repertoire, two or three songs, and then I went away. But you see, we can say that. So she was a concert pianist, and she quite likely was. And she had a secretary, and she had two daughters. And she was tired of her daughters taking care of her, and they had no interest in it. So she said to her secretary, "Would you like the girls?" And the secretary, "Sure, they're yours." And then she got tired of life, and she went to an Indian monastery, of a Catholic monastery. And she became a nun, and of course gave all of her money to the monastery. Well, after about a month or two or three, she got tired of being there. She tried to get out and said she wanted her money back and get out. And the cardinal said, "No way, you know, no way. You don't get to do that. And that money is ours, you know. We don't even have it anymore here." And so she tried to get the American Red Cross to get her out, and finally did, but they put her in jail. They wouldn't let her out. And so she finally came to Sedona, and then finally to me here, and taking the course. And what was she doing? She was having a ball. And when she came here, she was dressed like an old granny. She had old granny dresses on, and she had her hair bundled up in rags, you know, women do. And I said to her, "Cecilia, you're acting like an old woman." I said, "I have no place for an old woman in my life." She said, "Well, I don't want to be an old woman." I said, "Okay, come on. Let's go down to the hairdresser and have your hair done, have your teeth done." That means taking out the last two that she had in there. And have your, get some new clothes. So I said, "You choose what you want." So she chose a couple of business suits, a nice couple of dresses, but two business suits. And she had an afro haircut. And she looked great. She was having fun. Now, she came alive being herself for the first time in her life. She was being herself and having fun. Before that, because she was good at music, that possessed her, and she had to do those things. But now, there was nothing possessing her. She would work on my books. She'd work on my mailing that would come in. She'd open a letter, give me the letter, and throw the envelope in the trash, and in it was a check. And people said, "Didn't you get my check?" I said, "Nope." And she'd throw them out. And she'd go in the kitchen and wash the dishes, and then when she was done, she got tired, she'd take the rest and throw it in the trash. Throw the rest of our cutlery in the trash. And I had to put her onto different jobs. But she was a sincere, loving girl, and Adrian Bernowski was coming to us at that time, too. And she was a sincere, loving lady, and finally she left, and we sent her away, and she joined the Traveler in Long Beach. And the Traveler travels the world mentally and tells his people where he's going and what he's doing. And he must be a most creative fellow. But like Elizabeth Clare Prophet, who has the Summit Lighthouse, she has channeling for Jesus and other people through her, and her people come and listen, and she tells them what Jesus says and what these neat people say. And that's cool. That's cool, you know. If this is the program that turns you on and makes you feel happy, well, go for that. That's the same story that we have written of the Bible. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the Bible, Ellen? The story?
Of a religious, religious development of a people.
The Bible is the story of the religious development of a people. When I was attending the University of Chicago Theological Seminary, our profs were always telling us, the Bible is the story of the religious development of a people, of how they came through their unfoldment of working with the people and developing the people. Well, do you think the New Testament is any different?
No.
It's a story of the religious development of the Christian movement. And as strange as it may sound, that's what it was. But it had all sorts of problems. It had problems because their leader left early. A very wise move on his part. But he left early. And what was it that they should have done but didn't do? Anybody know? They should have what? They should have followed his teachings and not worshipped him, right?
Right.
You see, when they worship him, they lose the reason he was there. He was there to give them his teaching. Now, what was the teaching of Jesus the Christ? The teaching of the inner Christ, the teaching of the inner love, the teaching of unconditional love. Love your neighbor like yourself. Love the Lord thy God. I give you these two commandments that are greater than any commandment. And you're not supposed to ignore the law and the prophets, but this is the great commandment. This, if you do this, you got it made. Love the Lord thy God. And he said that God is within us. And love your neighbor, who is your creation, like yourself. If we love our neighbors like ourselves, our neighbors are in for a lot of trouble. Really. Because the way we love ourselves is pretty bad sometimes, you know? Pretty sad. I talk with some of you and I say, positive, 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 positive. Herb, will you shut up? Positive, 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 positive. Herb, won't you ever get tired of saying positive, 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 positive? Never. Never. Because that's where it's all at. When I am positive, I am living in my highest, I'm living in my best, I'm just having the greatest time that anyone could ever have. I am being myself and having fun, and this is what Jesus did when he was a youngster. This is what he did when he went out to play. And did Jesus have playmates? And the answer has to be no. Because there was nobody around, not even his cousin John the Baptist, you know. There was nobody around who was interested in doing his thing. And what was his thing? His thing was living in the presence of his inner self. Living in the presence of that inner light. Living in the presence of that inner God. Living in that presence 100% of the time. And when you live in that presence, what happens? There's no room for anybody else. There's no room for any games. Come on, let's play ping pong. Let's go do this, do that. No thanks, I'm doing something else right now. You're just sitting there. What do you mean you're doing something else? Yes, I am. I'm sitting here meditating. Meditating? That went out with Shakespeare. What are you talking about, you know? And no, I'm quite happy. I'm meditating. Well, how come you're sitting in front of us meditating? You're trying to make us feel bad? Why don't you go someplace else? You're right. You're right. I should not meditate in front of someone else, because if someone wants to do it, that's their choice. But I don't sit in front of other people and meditate, because I'm not here to show you up, to make you feel lesser than you are because you don't meditate. I am here just to be myself and have fun. And these gurus that sit in India in the middle of the street meditating, you know, with their eyes up like this here, you know, as they're meditating. And hey, that's cool. That's all good stuff. But why do they do it in the middle of the street? Why do they do it on the edges of busy thoroughfares? Why do they do it where the throngs can see them? And why do they do it with their hats sitting out in front of them? So people can throw coins in there. You see? Jesus had a word for that too. He said, when you pray from the street corners, you already have your reward. You already have your reward. Go to your Father in secret, who sees in secret, and your Father will reward you openly. Go to your divine self. He had to say Father because that was the term that they were used to using. Go to your divine self within and pray in private and let it be revealed openly. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. This was how Jesus knew how to pray. He said, "Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." The name of the presence of the divine in us is hallowed. It's holy. It's beautiful. "Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done." What is the kingdom of God? What is the will of God that will be done? That's our will. That's our kingdom. Our dreams. "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." In the divine state of consciousness, the heaven state of consciousness, it is done in the outer as well as the inner. "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread." In other words, out of the infinite allness comes the substance that feeds us, the substance that makes us satisfied with everything. "And forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors." If we owe people and haven't paid them, we can never pay them. And we should also not hold other people to owing us debts. Because the minute we hold people owing us debts, we begin to count it up and say, "Well, you know, so-and-so owed me this much, and they owe me that much." And that comes to a tidy sum of maybe $30,000, $50,000. You know, it's a lot of money. And should I just forget it or not? Well, don't forget it. Just never think about it. Never think about it. "Leave us not in temptation." One saying is, "Leave us not in temptation," or "lead us." Lead us, that's another good one. "Lead us not in temptation." As though the divine in us would lead us into temptation. As though the divine in us would leave us in temptation. You know, how silly. "But deliver us from evil." Take us away from all things that are not to our benefit. "For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen." You see, the Lord's Prayer is such a beautiful, simple, wonderful, humanistic statement. It points to the divine, but it's a humanistic statement. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. But it is no good. "Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come. Holy Mary, Mother of God, bless us, forgive us in our hour of need." But you know, you say these prayers so quickly, you say them so meaninglessly, you say them so repetitiously that they don't touch your soul. They don't touch your heart. I love it when we sing, "Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And leave us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen." And that's one of the things that Jesus taught us, didn't he? The Lord's Prayer. It's been interpreted and misinterpreted and reinterpreted. What language did Jesus speak?
Aramaic.
What language was it translated into?
Greek.
And? Greek and Latin.
Latin,
yeah. Yeah, Romanish, you know. And Deutsch, the German Bible, remember?
Yeah.
The Gutenberg Bible. And what is the most interesting Bible on earth? The what Bible?
King James Bible?
King James. King James Bible. What does the King James Bible do? The King James Bible is our thee, thou, they, and those. You know,
yeah.
It's that very archaic language. And beautiful, but very archaic. Now, I want to ask you a question. But just for your amusement, What Bible do you think that Michelangelo studied when he did the Sistine Chapel, or in preparation for the Sistine Chapel?
He didn't need a Bible.
Yeah, I would say that's true, but he did have a Bible because he did have a script. He had the Pope. Yeah. He had a picture of what he was supposed to put up there. What was in the picture was from within him, from his own personal Bible. But the general imagery was from the Greek Bible. Now you say, well, surely it was from the Roman Bible.
And there must be Greek because of the many gods there.
Yeah. But you see, it was from the Greek. And it was very charming, very charming. And this is something that we all run through. It's something that we all live in. It's something that we all do. Now, what was the youth and the small, I don't want to say little, but the child life of Jesus? Have you seen any movies? Have you seen Forrest Gump? Have you seen other movies with children in it? What was the other one that we saw the other day? That's a guy about living forever. Tate?
Attack Everlasting, yeah.
Tate Everlasting.
Attack.
Yeah. And what's that all about? I mean, that's somebody's version of the Bible, too. Very charming story.
And
I'm sorry?
And that little girl,
Pollyanna?
Well, Pollyanna, no, I mean...
Oh, you mean forever loving, or...
No, this little girl who was giving all these films. You know, this
Oh, Shirley Temple.
Oh, Shirley Temple,
yes.
Oh, gosh, this is so cool.
Yeah. Well, you see, that's beautiful stuff. And what kind of life did those children lead?
Mm.
Now, you can't look at their movie lives, and you can't look at their personal lives, because they were different. They were children who had, in their own rights, lots of money. They were children who had personalities that they could stand out and do the work that they did. But was Jesus like any of them? And the answer is absolutely no. He wasn't like any of them because he was in himself. How could he write and speak the things he did if he was not a totally introspective person? He was totally introspective because that was his nature and that was who he was. Are you totally introspective? Are you able to do this? You know, you can become a little child again if you wish. But just remember, today Jesus would have been, 75 or 80 years old at the time he would do his ministry, because that was what he was when he was 30 years old in his time. Now, you see, Ingeborg, 85 years old, you know, how old is our Bill Ellsworth, and how old is Dodie, and, you know, what?
84, Bill Ellsworth.
He's 88. Come on now, 87, 88. But he's your same age, isn't he, Dodie?
Yep.
Yeah, Bill and Dorothea were the same age. Remember, we went to the party, we said they're the same age. And so now is about the time that you, if you were Jesus, and you are, you would be starting your ministry. So, Miss Dorothea, Dodie,
yes, sir.
Let's get that ministry going. And, hey, Dorothea,
yes.
Your ministry is whatever you want it to be. Your ministry is being yourself and having fun. Can you handle that?
Yep.
You can handle that. And is anyone there at all to tell you how to do it or how you must do it? No. You are a free agent. You are totally free. You left one of your gurus behind, and I'm sure you had other gurus too that you've left behind, and now you are outpacing all of them. You're out front, and what are you going to do? Be yourself and have fun. You're going to be yourself and have fun because that's all you know how to do. Does this make sense to anybody?
Yes.
Now, can you see the childhood of Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
It's in each one of us. And can you see how wonderful it is when we just let go and be ourselves? I tell you, you're wonderful. And I love you all so very much because you're just fun to be with, you're fun to share with, and you're fun to say, I love you.
Thank you. Thank you. Love you.